from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny.
By 2015, if we don't change how we're operating from a business perspective, we will go into the red. And obviously we can't and will not let that happen.
That was UCSF Chancellor Susan Desmond-Hellman talking about her plan to have the UC system become more autonomous, and we'll discuss the Chancellor's proposed plan with her in the hour ahead. We'll also find out what she envisions for the future of one of the nation's top medical centers. Next on Forum, after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's Forum program. Last Thursday, UCSF Chancellor Susan Desmond-Hellman proposed to the UC Regents that a small working group be formed to help UCSF explore ways to ensure its financial future. And last year, UCSF received $532.8 million in funding from the National Institute of Health, second in public institution funding only to Johns Hopkins. But the chancellor believes a new structure is needed to keep UCSF as a premier institution and to ensure its future growth, especially with the costs that continue to accrue with the Mission Bay project, seismic upgrades and pensions, and in the wake of severe budgetary cutbacks. UC is the only university within the UC system exclusively made up of graduate students, and only 1% of its revenue comes from student tuition. So greater financial independence is one of the major reasons behind what the chancellor is proposing in the way of change. Since 2009, Susan Desmond-Hellman has been chancellor of UCSF, one of the top biomedical research institutions in the world and one of the top medical centers in the United States. She joins us in studio for this morning's opening hour. Good to have you back here on Forum. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, let's talk about what you're proposing here. I mean, I know that we're just getting a working group together at this point, but you're really talking about a new business model, get this working group exploring alternative financial relationships between UCSF and the UC system and alternate governance. And all of this seems pretty heady in the light of the fact that, from many people's perspective, maybe you could be seceding from UC, but that's not what you're talking about at all, is it?
Absolutely not. I think the most important thing to start with is what this is not. So we want to be a part of the incredible University of California system. In fact, we're proud to be a part of the UC system. So this is not a split. This is not a secession. In addition, we agree with and want to contribute financially to the UC system as a member of the University of California system. We want that financial relationship to be fair and transparent and predictable. But what this is about is pushing ourselves very hard to answer the question, how can UCSF maintain its excellence? How can we train leaders and contributors in science and health? How do we stay excellent at such a turbulent time? And how do we ensure that we execute our public mission, which we hold near and dear, at a time of diminished resources?
Well, your projected expenses by 2015 will exceed, as I understand it, or outpace the revenues that come in, and costs are rising faster than the revenues are coming in.
That's what our 10-year plan showed us, and there's reasons for that. You talked about some of them. We'll be opening up a new medical center at Mission Bay, and the transition of patients and staff to a new Benioff Children's Hospital, Women's Hospital, and Cancer Hospital is an expensive thing that we have coming up in the 2014-15 time period. We have an increase in personnel-related costs. Specifically, the pension costs are rising for UCSF. And this is at a time of healthcare reform. So we expect lowered clinical dollars and a flat NIH. And we don't expect a rise in the NIH budget that we've seen. All that said, we think we have opportunities. So we've been pushing ourselves to say, look, we've been cutting administrative costs, which I'm very proud of all of the folks at UCSF. We have over 400 people working to cut as much as $50 million annually by 2013. But we can't cut our way to excellence. So part of this is pushing ourselves to say, what will we do to make sure that we don't end up in the red by 2015.
And you can't keep bringing costs up with respect to tuition. I mean, that's just not going to make a dent in the costs that you're going to face, is it?
Well, it's more than that. We are not looking at tuition as a way to solve our financial challenges for a couple of reasons. One is that tuition is 1% of our entire budget. But more importantly, UCSF aspires to train and teach kids and young adults in this case who will be the future healthcare leaders and research leaders for our state and for our nation and for the world. Many of those students are underrepresented minorities. So we think that if we raise tuition, we're at risk of driving away those very students who we want most at UCSF, who may come from disadvantaged backgrounds or be the first in their family to go to college and can go back into their community and make a huge difference. So we don't want those kids going to Harvard instead
of
UCSF.
Well, in fact, I think you publicly spoke about a young African-American student who did go to Harvard because he couldn't get the loan that he needed from UCSF.
He looked at the financial picture of his attending UCSF or Harvard, and when he did the math came out better at Harvard for him net in terms of the expense. So we have student debt that we're concerned about, and we have students like that student who we want at UCSF. And one more thing about tuition is that's very important for us is we want students to pick whatever career inspires them and drives their passion. That might be primary care. That might be inner city dentistry. It might be global health. It might be health policy. We don't want their choice of career to be driven by debt. So if you are facing a $100,000 loan obligation at graduation, it's really tough to say, I'm going to go back and give back as a matter of public service. So we don't think of tuition as a financial lever and have a lot of reasons to push ourselves hard to maintain as low as possible a tuition.
Well, as long as we're talking about revenue, 80% of the revenue comes from medical center and grants, as I understand it. And when you said earlier that you want to stay within the UC system, about $49 million goes to the $4 billion budget of UC, of their budget. In fact, some have thought about it as a kind of a tax almost. Do you get the bang for the buck, frankly?
Well, it's really important to understand that there's a couple points I would make on what you just said. We feel like we should contribute to the UC system. We're a part of the UC system, and we're also incredibly grateful for wonderful services we get from the Office of the President. The Office of the President does things like pensions. They do negotiations with unions. They provide legal and accounting and audit services that we utilize and we're grateful for. So we want to pay for that, and we want to pay to be part of the UC system. On the other hand, as the state has cut back and as our expenses rise, we would like that to be as fair and transparent as possible. We don't utilize undergraduate services, as an example.
Well, President Yudof, I guess, has said he's uncertain what the effect of this would be if you went into this autonomous plan that you're talking about. But I'm also apprised of the fact that Ivan Evans, president of the San Diego Faculty Association, came out with a statement. He said, the funds are essential to the functioning of the UC system, meaning the funds from UCSF. Without its share from external funds, professional schools such as UCSF and hard science divisions annually bring in, it's clear that UC could not survive. There is this concern, there is this anxiety about what this autonomy will mean in terms of the ongoing, well, unity of the UC system.
Yeah, and I hear that concern. I guess here's the way that I would think about it. And one of our alums actually wrote a letter to the editor. So I had a wonderful conversation this week with Dr. Gould, who's nearly 87. She's about to celebrate her birthday, and she gave me feedback that she sees UCSF as a member of the family of UC. She's one of eight kids and attended both Cal and UCSF, and as a member of that family, what is our obligation to the family, and how do we look to members of that family? And many of us during a time of recession are facing that. We have family members who might be struggling, and there's more or less successful members of the family. Here's the way I look at it. I think UCSF does have obligations as a member of the family and the system of University of California, but here's what we can't let happen. We can't let a 10-university system be driven to mediocrity or to be driven to lower our expectations.
Well, so, you're talking even higher. You're saying you want to be rival of the Mayo Clinic, aren't you?
I actually think that that's, that is in some ways not as high a bar as I would like. What I think we have the talent and the opportunity in science as never before, I think UCSF should demonstrate what an academic medical center in the 21st century should look like. How do we train future healthcare providers? How do we bend that cost curve that everyone's so concerned about? How do we think about access, affordability, and innovation? Because no one's done that well. So we have these big aspirations. And what we're trying to do is make our financial plan and our relationship with the state allow us to meet those. And I would posit that in doing so, we'll benefit the entire UC system.
Actually, we're talking to Susan Desmond-Hellman, who is Chancellor of the University of California, and by the way, former president of product development at Genentech. And we'll talk about what you envision here about some other revenue sources as well. But you came in here, I got to say, all lit up about the excitement in science and the future of science and feeling as if we're on the brink of new discoveries that really are extraordinary.
It is a time like no other. You know, in a couple of weeks ago during the J.P. Morgan conference here in San Francisco, there was a buzz in the air. And one of the many reasons for the buzz in the air was that sequencing an entire human genome now looks to be very close to being $1,000. So the fact that you or I could know our genome. And
Craig Venter told me it's going to be cheaper than that.
I think it's going to be cheaper than an MRI to get a sort of high-class imaging test. So what does that mean for medicine, and what does that mean for improving health? So if you put low-cost sequencing, electronic health records, personalized or precision medicine becomes real. And what we've been talking about at UCSF, given that, you know, here we are with Silicon Valley down the road from us and increasingly in our town in San Francisco, how do we drive change in ways that benefit patients? How do we bring all that excitement to society in ways that are revolutionary? So I am really excited about that. And that's in part what I think we need to drive in a very competitive area of healthcare and research. We compete for those NIH grants. Our faculty are competing nationally for that leadership in bringing in research grants. So
well,
I want an environment to allow for that.
You made it very clear that it's not going to happen through breaking away from UC or from the UC system. There is, I guess, also some concern about privatization in all this. And let's talk about that, because you've been talking about potential future new revenue streams, spinning off successful biotech companies or creating a joint venture for an outpatient pharmacy with a for-profit pharmaceutical company, new opportunities in technology transfer. All of these kinds of things sound really, especially if somebody coming from the private sector as you do, wonderfully potential, but they also make people nervous too. Let me in fact give you a little sample of response from a blogger. The blogger happens to be a professor of medicine at Brown. I want to make sure I get his name right. It's Roy Poses, clinical associate professor of medicine at Brown University. And he says, Chancellor Desmond-Hellman came not from academia but from the world of for-profit biotechnology. She was former president for drug development for Genentech. 2.5 years ago, I suggested that hiring a lavishly compensated top executive from a biotech firm known for its high drug prices to run a public health sciences university does considerably blur the line between academic medicine and the healthcare industry. 3 months ago, I noted that Dr. Desmond-Hellman seemed to be advocating the university's focus turn to product development so that it would start to emulate a contract research organization. Now it appears that Dr. Desmond-Hellman wants to traverse the line between government and the private sector so that the organization can make a ton of money and focus on spinning innovations into business deals, according to the San Francisco Chronicle.
So here, in no way is what we're talking about privatization. UCSF and I count myself at the head of this pack. Our faculty, our staff, our students and trainees absolutely embrace our public mission. We're at San Francisco General. We're in the homeless clinic at Glide with our nursing school. Our dentists care for the poor people in San Francisco. And our pharmacy school runs the Poison Control Center for the state. So our public mission is essential for UCSF. It's not at all in question. But here's the thing. If UCSF publishes papers wins Nobel Prizes, does wonderful things in science, and that science never gets to society, that makes me sad. I think that doesn't fulfill our public mission. So we started at UCSF, and I think this has been very well said by my colleagues. So I'll tell you what my colleagues tell me. On the faculty, people who have been lifelong academicians, UCSF must partner with commercial entities so that our discoveries reach society. And so it's a means to that end. Can we then say that the public trust is very important to us, but how do we work with those commercial entities to improve our discoveries getting to society? That's a question we're trying to answer. And in doing so, we can generate funds for UCSF and drive all of what we're doing in the public mission. I think that's a virtuous circle. I think it needs to come with enormous care and attention to conflicts of interests. But I think that is essential for the future. And our trainees tell me, you know, Chancellor, I might end up, as you did after a 9-year stay at UCSF, in private industry. I may end up in policy in Washington. I may end up in sub-Saharan Africa. You all, you faculty members, you chancellor, need to have the ambition to train me for any of those careers, not only running a lab at UCSF. And that's what we hear from trainees. And I think that's a good thing. Our trainees have ambitions to change the world, as they should.
I'll tell you what else is a good thing. The fact that you were in the private sector allowed you to donate no less than $1 million to UCSF. And just to dispel any rumors to the contrary, we're talking about gossip in the next hour. There's no relation between Susan Desmond Hellman and the late Warren Hellman. I guess you were with Nancy Bechtel once, and somebody was asking if you were Warren Hellman's sister. And
Actually, we were talking about a funny story, and I, very sadly, as many people will in San Francisco, will deeply miss Warren Hellman. But his sister Nancy and I were together, and someone asked me if I was Warren's sister, and Nancy piped up, "No, I'm Warren's sister." So I will tell you though that for me, as for many people, Warren Hellman was a real role model, and my husband and I both greatly benefited as public school kids coming from public universities to UCSF for our medical training, and myself then in oncology, and my husband did his further training in infectious diseases. We're huge fans of UCSF and have donated to the scholarship program for our students as well as a distinguished professorship. So we are deeply part of that wish to give back and to serve the public at UCSF.
Tell me, since you're talking about medical education, yours and your husband's, you've been talking also publicly about the desire to shorten medical education, to have a whole different curriculum and customize it. What do you mean? What do you have in mind?
Well, let me tell you, one of the things I'm really excited about is that UCSF managed to recruit someone who's fantastic, our new vice dean for education in our medical school, Catherine Lucy. Catherine was chief resident the same year I was in 1986, so we go way back. And she has had a deep love for medical education and understanding how different learners approach medical education. So we recruited Dr. Lucy away from Ohio State, and she is a national leader in medical school education. She's asking those hard questions. How do different people learn? How can we use technology in learning? How long should someone stay in medical school before they go out into practice? And how do we train clinicians? And I just heard her speak about this. Think about preparing somebody who might be there in 2020. What's the healthcare environment in the U.S. and globally going to look like in 2020? And they may be in practice 2040, 2050. How do you think about preparing students for that? So I'm no expert in this, but happily, the experts tell me that we're going to need to change the way we think about training students.
Because of doctor shortage too, right?
There's a doctor shortage, and there's also this incredible tsunami of data coming at us. Every day, the amount of information added to what a physician or a nurse, a dentist, a pharmacist needs to know is massive. So we used to carry around these little cards. We'd call them our peripheral brain. Now you might have, you know, an iPad or some other device. But how does one think about what does it mean to be a clinician? What does bedside banter look like with electronic health records? And patients rarely complain to me about technology. They say, here's how long I was with my clinician. here's whether or not my doctor listened to me. So how do you bridge that wave of data and technology with that softer side of medicine that's so important to all of us?
We did a show just the other day on pain. We had a couple of Stanford researchers along with Melanie Threnstrom, a journalist, and there's a sense that there's just not enough research in this area, that there needs to be more, as well as more emphasis in learning about pain, let's say, and empathizing with it in medical education. I mean, all of these things suggest maybe a broader realm for what medical education ought to be offering. And from some perspectives, it seems constricted, but you're talking about maybe ways of synthesizing and bringing it into focus so that it's not as long a haul.
I think not only thinking about how it's not as long a haul, but what is the core curriculum that anyone should have who goes to a professional school? What does it mean to have an MD after your name, for example? And then how do you specialize or customize that training given the career that you'll go into? And one of the areas that you mentioned in pain, neuroscience is a great strength of UCSF. In fact, we'll open up this year a new neuroscience building at Mission Bay, and solving some of these issues about the brain, how the brain works, and the interaction between neuroscience and mental health are big key issues that UCSF is tackling today.
Talk about Mission Bay a little bit, because there's lots of things happening there. I mean, in addition to just what we foresee in terms of this being a major center of learning and so forth, what do you hope that it will put its signature as far as being on the map in?
Well, the wonderful thing about Mission Bay, it's the only new college campus, you know, the only university who's making a new campus in America right now is UCSF. And people who preceded me made some great decisions together with the city and county to invest in Mission Bay. So right now we have over 1 million square feet of wet lab space. And in the last couple of years, what's exciting is patients have come to Mission Bay. So we have an orthopedic clinic. Cardiovascular patients come to Mission Bay for their care now. And when we open up the UCSF Medical Center and the Benioff Children's Hospital at Mission Bay, by early 2015, we'll have a children's, women, and cancer hospital at Mission Bay. Surrounding UCSF are venture capital, biotech, and with Salesforce.com's purchase of property at Mission Bay, we'll see high tech in that area too. So what I love is Mayor Lee's vision of San Francisco as the city for innovation. I think Mission Bay is a great portrait of what that's going to look like.
Talking again with Chancellor Susan Desmond-Hellmann, and let me open the phone lines. I know there are many of you who have questions for the chancellor or may want to join our conversation with comments and reflections, thoughts, whatever's on your mind certainly is welcome. Here's the toll-free number to join us. It's 866-733-6786, and we do welcome your phone calls, so feel free to join us at that number, 866-733-6786. You can also email us, forum@kqed.org is our email address, and you can post any questions or comments you might have on our website by going to kqed.org/forum. Clicking on this segment, and you can also, of course, put any questions or comments you might have on our Facebook page. And we ought to mention that we're talking about really a five-tiered plan here that you're putting forward. This is just one part of it. And you have the backing, as far as I've been reading, of Regent Chair Sherry Lansing.
Regent Lansing at the UC Regents meeting said that the Regents would have an open mind. And I think that was very important to me and my colleagues, because we see this with the formation of the work group as a start of a discussion where there'll be lots of input and views added.
And we'll have that when we return. Again, you can join us at our toll-free number, 866-733-6786. We'll get your impact or email us, forum@kqed.org. You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're spending this opening hour of Forum with Chancellor Susan Desmond-Hellmann. She is Chancellor of UC San Francisco, former President of Product Development at Genentech. And University of California, San Francisco is considering severing some of its ties with the nine-campus UC system. UCSF Chancellor Susan Desmond-Hellmann says the school is sending more money to the UC system and is getting back in benefits. And we're talking to her about the proposal, and she has certainly been reassuring about the fact that there will not be any secession here. Let me go to your calls here, and let's begin with Angela. Good morning.
Good morning. So I have a question for Sue. I'm a graduate of UC Berkeley and was just wondering what you think this means for the other campuses, both in terms of funding and will they be looking at other governance structures too?
Yeah, you're going to be a Pied Piper here?
So I think the first thing that I want to emphasize is that UCSF is happy to collaborate and to partner with the entire UC system. We do so in the most obvious way through UC Health, which is a collaboration amongst all the UC centers that have medical centers. And that's incredibly positive and productive. We have two programs that I would point out with UC Berkeley among many. One, a joint MD-MPH degree in medicine and public health, and the other, a brand new program with the School of Engineering at Berkeley, which is like an MBA equivalent, a master's degree of translational medicine, a very exciting program. So in no way does this recommendation or this thinking change our programmatic collaborations with the other campuses. I imagine that every chancellor, and I know firsthand that every chancellor is, as I have done with my team, looking at how does their campus thrive during this difficult period of time. It's my hope that the work we do in this work group and with the UC Regents and the Office of the President help the other campuses as they think about this. And in some ways, we can think of what UCSF is doing as a pilot for the entire system, because it is my expectation that every campus is going to have to look at their unique strengths and how they're relate to their community to make sure that they thrive and maintain excellence, as UCSF is doing.
Essentially, if there's a paradigm here, so to speak, it's UC Hastings or Lawrence Livermore. I mean, they function in a similar way that what you're proposing.
UC Hastings functions contractually very, very differently, but they function with their own board of overseers at UC Hastings.
And you would have your own board of directors. Yeah.
And that is true. In our proposal, we are also suggesting that this work group look at a continued relationship with the regents, but again, to have a local board that could help us with driving some of this competition in healthcare in particular. The other thing is the national labs. The national labs have an oversight. Now, they are federally funded, very important, different funding structure, but their oversight under the UC Regents is served very well and in a unique fashion that we think might serve us well, like the national labs.
And here's some clarity from a listener, Amy, who says, great show as always, thank you. But she goes on to say, my statement that UCSF is the sole graduate school in the system is inaccurate. UC Hastings is a solely graduate school, a law school, and it receives less than 8% of its funding from the state. Hastings is not governed by the UC Regents and has the independent governance that UCSF is now seeking. Well, when I said that, I meant it didn't have any undergraduates. I was thinking about law school. But here's Colin, who says, last night in the State of the Union, the president said that if universities did not cap their tuition, then they would lose dollars from the federal government. He didn't make clear what he meant by this or whether this included inflationary growth or something else. How do you feel about that? Is this the first you've heard of it? And do you feel this is a serious issue for your university or for this system as a whole?
It was the first at the State of the Union speech that I had heard of the president's interest in tuition, but I wasn't surprised. I think that his administration is likely receiving feedback, as we have been, about the pressure that tuition increases are putting on families and the challenges that families have of thinking of putting one or many of their children through the university system, and the importance of a public university system in terms of families thinking about their kids having a chance to have an education. I do think, and it's been part of our financial plan at UCSF, we must look at tuition as something that is incredibly important for families as they think about their choices and for students as they think about their choices. We also have to improve the aid to our students, and it's one of the aspects of UCSF we focused on. We had not had in years past fundraising for student scholarship support, and that's something new that we've focused on at UCSF.
And we'll focus on more of your calls. We'll bring in Mark next. Mark, join us. You're on. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to thank the chancellor for everything the UCSF did. My dad, he went to the Memory and Aging Center at UCSF, where he was diagnosed with dementia with Lewy bodies, and their diagnosis and their subsequent help really raised his quality of life and helped him out tremendously. So I just wanted to say thank you.
Well, thank you for that call. In fact, here's as long as we're getting these kudos, here's a listener who says, thank you for your courage and vision, Chancellor. UCSF is indeed a unique campus, actually two campuses, with the amazing jewel of the UCSF Fresno a few hundred miles away. We should recognize the unique opportunities for patient care, teaching, and research between these two sites, a special feature that does distinguish UCSF from all of the other UC campuses. The general public should be enlightened to understand why the Chancellor's proposal does deserve careful consideration. And my question to the Chancellor, what is your specific vision for the collaborations between UCSF San Francisco and UCSF Fresno?
So thank you for the kudos and also for the shout out to UCSF Fresno. UCSF Fresno is a very important part of our training program and part of the program that we have that does address some of the areas of our state that are underserved in terms of clinical care and medical support. The long-term vision is very much a part of a system-wide question that the regents and the Office of the President are addressing, and I don't consider myself an expert on this, but the areas of California that are underserved for physicians are very much looking to have medical schools of their own at a time of diminished resources. These are very tough questions that are complex and need a lot of attention. We've focused very much on how do we train students, including those students who come from underserved areas in California. We have something called the Prime Program and Pathways Program that allow for students from underrepresented areas and backgrounds to go back to their regions. And that's one part of the vision. I just want to say really quickly, thank you to Mark for mentioning your dad and our Memory and Aging Center. Bruce Miller and his colleagues at the Memory and Aging Center at UCSF do heroic work in addressing dementia, not just Alzheimer's, but other causes of dementia that are an absolute public health issue in our community, in our state, and in our nation. And it's one of the areas that I'm most passionate about our faculty tackling. You know, we've got an aging population, and thinking about what causes dementia, but way more than what causes and what could solve or delay the onset of dementia, what Dr. Miller and his colleagues are doing is thinking about what's the right care. How do you care for the caregivers? Increasingly a huge issue with memory and aging issues. And so I really want to salute their work, and I'm so happy that Mark and his family benefited from it.
Have they been doing work in conjunction at all with the Buck Institute?
They have been working with the Buck Institute on aging, and I would also mention a really wonderful program through our Veterans Administration to look at post-traumatic disorders. So there appears to be, and our Nobel Prize winner, Stan Prusner, is looking at a potential shared relationship in terms of etiology between dementia, post-concussive disorders that we're seeing in football and other sports, and post-traumatic disorders that we're seeing in our military. So a lot of really basic work that might break open some of these causes and therefore maybe remedies or solutions to dementia.
I should mention, Stan is a friend of mine who did his work in prions, but you have three other Nobel laureates there, don't you?
We certainly do. We're very proud of them. The most recent of which is Elizabeth Blackburn,
yes,
who was 2009 winner for her work on telomerase and telomerase. Thinking
we did one
about
of our
chromosomes.
First person shows with Elizabeth.
Yeah.
In fact.
And then, of course, my predecessor, Michael
Bishop yeah,
who with Harold Varmus won the Nobel for their seminal work in cancer etiology.
And also wrote a book about winning a Nobel Prize, or actually, it was kind of a funny book about Nobel Prizes.
With a wonderful title, How to Win the Nobel Prize.
Yes.
It was a great book.
Let's get Lewis on as our next caller. Lewis, join us.
Yes, thank you for having me. My comment is that the chancellor is being naive because she has not gone to or she's not using the Hazard School of Business, the Berkeley School of Business. In this situation, looking at it as a business, you don't give away the store to the big corporations who are going to tell you what kind of products to develop or not to develop. What you do is you compete with private business, bringing out your own medicines to the marketplace. So what's frustrating to me is that the chancellor is giving away the store, like UC Berkeley has done to many companies already, and the companies are not interested in producing definite medicines, but medicines that will last, the patient has to take for a lifetime. So where are the good medicines? Nowhere to be found. But you have to pay now $100 for a pill. So the university should compete with private companies.
Well, let's hear what the chancellor has to say. Thank you, Louis.
So, Louis, I appreciate the question. Let me just address it in two ways. First, I can assure you that as chancellor, I will not have UCSF give away the store. So we use our technology transfer office and our intellectual property to make sure that when we interact with private industry, that we have anything that the university has created that has value is valued and paid for. And in some of our most recent collaborations that we've signed up for with companies like Pfizer or Sanofi, there is a very specific contractual relationship that makes sure that UCSF benefits from the value of our inventions. But your second point, I think, is a very important one, and that is how to drive down the cost of medicines and whether or not UCSF or other academic institutions should go into the business of commercializing products. I don't think that's the role of the university. The university is not set up, nor are we. Do we have expertise in commercialization. That's not what we do, and that's not the way we're operating. So we need to partner with others. And one of the relationships we set up recently I really like because it allows our researchers to publish, to seek curiosity-driven science, to teach, but also to collaborate with scientists in industry who do the more applied science, who might look at how do you get to FDA, how do you do clinical trials. On the other hand, I do agree with you that academia needs to help with the innovations that can drive down the unpredictability of product development and hopefully drive down the costs of such medicines.
Well, let me thank Louis for the call. And our next caller is Tom. You going to bring up UCSF-Stanford merger here, Tom?
Yeah, I was just wondering if the chancellor has taken any lessons from that failed merger from a few years back in her plan.
Well, yes, thank you for asking about that. The UCSF-Stanford merger happened at a time when I wasn't at UC, but I definitely have done a lot of homework and spoken to many colleagues about the thinking behind the merger, what happened during the merger.
It was disastrous thinking. I mean, to have two cultures so different, to the notion, I mean, talk about naivete. I mean, it seemed to me at the time and still seems to me in retrospect to be incredibly naive.
Well,
the thought that it could work.
I wasn't a part of the thinking, so I can't tell you what was behind that. What I will say is that I think UCSF learned a lot about our culture, about what drives our faculty, staff, and students during the merger. And I'm really pleased to tell you that our medical center, under the leadership of Mark Larratt and with our dean, Sam Hoggood, in the School of Medicine, our medical center has been in the top 10 for a decade. And so we came out of the merger with some significant lessons learned and focused on how does UCSF Medical Center thrive despite a rapidly changing, highly competitive environment. That highly competitive, rapidly changing environment is going to change even faster and be more challenging in the future.
Let me thank the caller and go to some of the web comments, some critical web comments. This listener writes, maybe the chancellor can explain how UCSF can plead poverty when the campus is receiving more than five times the amount of state funding per student than any other UC campus. And another comment, this is just another instance of the rush to profits, the symptoms of which are a rejection of social duty and a rationalization of unethical choices. They can claim all they like. It's about UC being a burden. But in truth, what's happening is a stealth privatization, which is to say a hijacking of public assets by wealthy players. Perhaps UCSF has already been hijacked from the inside by corporations like Genentech. If so, time to reform the institution by rejecting corporate influence, not by enabling it.
So I think a couple of things. UCSF does receive funds from the state, and the funds that we receive from the state for professional education are higher than the funds that one receives for undergraduate education. That's based on formulas that are based on the cost of educating a student in a professional school as compared to undergraduate. And UCSF
it's a different formula.
It's a different formula. And UCSF is grateful to the state for those funds. Let me not pass up the opportunity to tell you that. I think that's extremely important. I think the more important question is there something stealth going on? Is there something sneaky going on? And I want to address that head on. I think UCSF and I absolutely embrace our public mission. It is in the quest of that that we're pushing ourselves to say, how do we have a sustainable financial plan so that we can execute that public mission? I'm a product of public higher education, as is my husband, and I don't want public school kids to have to lower their expectations. I don't want their families or them to say, okay, we can't expect the best, the excellence that UCSF has to offer. I think we owe those kids a great education, and those families are, and the families that access their clinical care at UCSF deserve the best. So I'm very committed to them. And I can assure you that there is everything we're doing is out in the open. We presented to the regents and asked for a work group in a public open forum.
It's going to be, at least the plan is to get it submitted by July 2012, and that'll all be transparent and open to the public?
That will be an open discussion at the regents at the July timeframe.
Let me go to some more of your calls, and we go next to Mark. Good morning.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call. Enjoying the show. I'd have to say that the last thing it seems to me the chancellor could be accused of is naivete. And if anyone is to be accused of naivete, I think it's people who think that UCSF or perhaps any academic center in this day and age can operate in a vacuum where there's not a relationship with private interests and industry. And that dovetails into my question. I'm a physician, surgeon by training, who for some years now has been working almost exclusively in medical technology. And I know that there are quite a few physicians here in the Valley who have chosen to do the same thing for various reasons, and probably not too much of a stretch to say that most faculty members at, say, Stanford Medical Center have a company of their own or are involved with one. In view of that, and in view of the location where UCSF is, I'm wondering if there is some high-level strategic discussion regarding medical training and recognition of the fact that perhaps a great number of physicians, particularly graduating from UCSF, may choose career paths that traditionally have not been very common and that are not clinical, and perhaps provide those physicians with resources, contacts, and education to do that. And I'll take my comments off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for the call.
Right. Thank you for that question. I will tell you that UCSF, I think, is appropriately proud that in 1976, due to Herb Boyer and Bob Swanson getting together, not only was a company Genentech created, but the entire biotech industry was created as a result of science at UCSF and Stanford, with Stan Cohen being the co-discoverer of recombinant DNA. So we have a long history of that kind of innovation happening at UCSF, but you're right, not traditionally training people to think about, if they choose a career in industry, what can that look like? So I'll point out just two of many opportunities at UCSF. One is we have a clinical and translational sciences institute under Clay Johnson, and this institute is absolutely focused on that translational part of science. How do you move something from the bench into the area of doing clinical trials? And just as importantly, how does it get from clinical trials to approval and from approval out into the community? So there are many phases of how we want to add value in clinical and scientific translation.
I was just
and
thinking of all the extraordinary opposition to recombinant DNA since you mentioned that.
You remember, and part of this is a big policy thing. So we also have the Phil Lee Policy Institute at UCSF thinking about these key policy issues, and training is a big part of the policy involved in this. And finally, we have the QB3, Quantitative Biology 3, that is a collaborative project between UCSF, UC Berkeley, and UC Santa Cruz under Reg Kelly's leadership, where we have everything from an IPO in a box toolkit for people who don't know about how to start a business that's available, training, interaction with venture capitalists, and a garage, which is the moniker we give to low-cost benchtop space for scientists and physicians who would like to do experiments at low costs as they're trying to create their own companies. So we're trying to create an environment that is as important for the trainee or student who aspires to a Nobel Prize as it is to a trainee who is inspired by, like our own Bill Rutter, to create Chiron. And having training that's available to people, no matter which of those careers they choose, is something that we want to do.
Who's going to be on the panel of this working group?
We haven't put together the working group yet. What we agreed with the regents is that this future of UCSF working group membership would be recommended to Chair Lansing and to President Udoff by me. We expect that the working group will have membership from a broad variety of folks that can come back to the regents to give them input.
And will that panel be open to the public?
The working group, the details and the logistics of the working group haven't been worked out yet. But as I mentioned, the most important thing, I expect that we'll have an interim report and the final report will be delivered publicly to the regents.
Getting a lot of questions by email and web comments here. Here's Grisha, who writes, my husband is a second-year student at UCSF Medical School. We are both the first in our family to go to college. It's both refreshing and powerful to hear the chancellor not balancing the budget on student tuition. The chancellor is asking the right questions with the right attitude. We believe in her and support her solutions. Another listener named Tim says, I'm a gastroenterologist practicing in Marin County. UCSF is my preferred quaternary care referral center for advanced therapeutic endoscopy, liver transplantation, and surgery. I have enormous respect for the quality of care at UCSF and the professionalism of its physicians and surgeons. However, UCSF seems to have great difficulty in retaining junior faculty. Many of these wonderful doctors leave for Sutter CPMC or other academic institutions. Compensation, support services for physicians, and sometimes constraints on practice applied by senior physicians may be among the reasons. Please look into these nuts and bolts issues. In addition to the more glamorous priorities that you've talked about this morning,
I really love that question and couldn't agree more with the physician who was generous enough to write in. First of all, I'm really glad that you are happy with the excellence and the quality at UCSF. Nothing makes me happier than hearing, you know, Chancellor, my loved one sought care at UCSF and had a great outcome, or we were well treated, or you took care and compassion with my loved one. We have to make it a great career to prosper in academic medicine. It is a huge challenge to move from training into the clinic and into getting your first grants from NIH if you're a researcher, into academic clinical care if you're part of the medical center. These are very tough transitions, and we have a number of different resources we're making available to faculty, but we need to do more, and we need to do that aggressively, because I couldn't agree more that knowing that you have UCSF to refer your patients to is a key part. And I would also say, knowing that if you're a veteran, you can seek care with our faculty at the VA, or if you need to use the Safety Net Hospital or the Trauma Center, that you have great, great physicians at San Francisco General. So we take that very seriously. And if you have any more suggestions, please send them to me.
Well, we'll hear from some more callers, and Kelly joins us. Kelly, you're on.
Hi. I want to quickly ask you about If a miracle happened and Wendell Potter, he was interviewed on 60 Minutes about being a CEO for Cigna, if his wishes that there would be better health system similar to Canada, single-payer Medicare for all, if a miracle happened and that happened, would that help or hurt UCSF?
So I want to make sure that I understand the question. So if the U.S. went to a more Canada-like system or a Medicare-for-all-like system of comprehensive health coverage, is that – did I understand
yeah.
that?
Mm-hmm. So, would that help UCSF or hurt UCSF?
Well, I think there's a couple of different aspects. First of all, I think that in terms of access to medical care, I think that having coverage and decreasing the number of patients who are uninsured would be a positive. On the other hand, the reimbursement for a system like UCSF that often does quaternary care, the reimbursement from Medicare today is less than the reimbursement for private insurance. So UCSF, as would all our colleagues, needs to look hard at all of our costs. And given that healthcare reform is coming in the U.S., it's an important part of what our medical center is focused on today, is looking at everything we can do to decrease costs in our system, because Medicare reimbursement would be lower than what we receive today from private insurance.
And we thank you for the call. Gabriel writes, I'm currently a second-year UCSF ISIS postdoctoral scholar at the new Broad Stem Cell Center. As you know, UCSF is one of the first universities in the country to establish a program to financially support postdocs who want to teach at minority-serving institutions while training at UCSF. Given the continued success of UCSF, how do you see the role of UCSF expanding in its relationship with schools like San Francisco State and City College?
Well, I'm very glad to hear that question, because one of the things we're particularly proud of is that in 1987, Bruce Alberts, who's currently the editor of Science and former head of National Academy of Sciences, who's one of our great faculty members, Bruce started a collaboration between UCSF and the City and County of San Francisco called the Science and Education Partnership. So more than 80% of all the K-12 schools in our city are touched by a UCSF faculty member or student. We interact with the students. Our scientists help the educators keep up on their science facts. We have a wonderful internship program that happens in the summer with poster presentations that I've attended. These kids are smart. They're really smart, and they have wonderful experiences with our faculty. We have a relationship, as mentioned, with San Francisco State. So UCSF absolutely loves the Science and Education Partnership. And the other thing I'll say is we actually have a San Francisco Unified School District classroom in our children's hospital at UCSF. The Benioff Children's Hospital includes a classroom for kids and their siblings who are undergoing very difficult medical procedures like a transplant.
Well, we've come to the end of the hour. We might as well end with a moment of levity. I'm looking at an email here from Julie who says, I guess you said wetlands instead of wet labs. And she said, are we building in the wetlands? I thought they were being restored. Could you please elaborate?
If I said wetlands, I deeply apologize. I was talking about Mission Bay and the wet labs, but that gives me a chance to point out that our new Broad Stem Cell Center and the Dolby program on stem cells is at Parnassus. So we're also doing wonderful research and science still on Parnassus.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. We will obviously continue to follow the story as it unfolds and look forward to what actually gets in place in July. Again, Susan Desmond-Hellman is Chancellor of University of California at San Francisco. And we are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11. 10 o'clock hour is a repeat, and we'll be looking at another subject in the hour ahead. In fact, that subject is gossip, so stay tuned. We're going to find out about some new research on gossip from UC Berkeley and talk with former American Scholar editor Joseph Epstein, who's written a book on the subject. For all of us at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Ferro, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.